States v. Brownell. Mr. Simon?
Your Honors, if it please the Court, I'm Attorney Thomas C. Simon, representing Mr. Brownell. We were not trial counsel, however, he has retained us to do this appeal. Mr. Brownell was originally entered a plea of guilty in the Eastern District of Wisconsin in October of 2005 and was sentenced on April 21st, 2006. He was convicted of one count of conspiracy to commit mail or wire fraud. During his sentencing hearing, it was determined that his offense level, and based on the pre-sentence report, he was at a level 39 that exceeded the maximum statutory sentence that was allowable under the crime he was convicted of, which was 240 months. The offense level of 39 placed him with a incarceration period between 262 and 327 months. The reason we're here is, although the judge at sentencing needs to make a reasonable estimate for a loss amount, he's clearly received a 20-level enhancement because the loss amount was determined to be between $7 and $20 million. The district court determined that the approximate loss amount was $7.6 million. Clearly, we raised two issues on the appeal that would lower his offense level. The first being that the actual calculation for the amount of loss was clear error and that there were some inconsistencies there, pointing out three specific areas. We also addressed the issue of Mr. Brownell being determined to be a leader or organizer as opposed to a manager, which increased his offense level by four levels.
I wanted to ask you about this Harrison Lakes purchase, which I guess is $1.56 million of
that's
the
correct
calculation. As I understand it, he first buys this in the name of Bielinski Homes, which is related to, at that stage, do you think? I mean, suppose it had just stayed there and he had never gone to State Financial Bank to get the other loan to pay it back. Now, surely that would be an intended loss in the sense that
it was actually purchased, and Attorney Jacobs can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe from the sentencing transcript, it was originally purchased by an entity known as FHB, which consisted of Mr. Brownell and the two principals of Bielinski Brothers. Mr. Brownell was a party to that. After that purchase, then Mr. Brownell, along with Attorney Grawl, formed another entity called Georgetown LLC, obtained a loan and purchased that property at that point.
Right, but that's quite something. I mean, I'm looking at your brief at page 10 where you're talking about this, and it seems that the initial purchase of the property happens in October 2003, and then the second transfer, if you will, to Mr. Brownell and Mr. Grawl is July 2004, so it's 9 months, give or take.
That's correct, Your Honor.
That they have it. And so I'm just trying to sort of figure out if there's anything wrong with the first transfer and then why, you know, sort of how we ought to view this, because the government's argument is that maybe Bielinski Brothers wasn't fully informed, maybe their money, you know, to the tune of more than $1.5 million, is at risk through the whole time.
Not to speak for the government, but I think their argument is that there was a $6.5 million line of credit,
right, yeah,
that was fraudulently obtained.
Right.
Whether or not the purchase of the property for $1.56 million was improper, based on the pre-sentence report, based on the events that occurred, the Bielinski Brothers, I don't believe, had knowledge of it, but it was a purchase on their behalf for their business to benefit their business. Ultimately, Mr. Brownell then purchased that property back, in a sense repaying what he had taken prior to anyone discovering any of this.
But it's all made, I mean, but they're not, but the amount of loss is not put in as the full line of credit. It's only the amount that was used to buy this property, right?
Correct, which is why our argument, in a sense, is the government could have attempted to put in the entire $6.5 million line of credit as an intended loss. They didn't. They chose to submit to the court the $1.56 million. As a result, Mr. Brownell still was not given credit for repaying that amount, even though he took it allegedly fraudulently in this case, because the Belinskys weren't aware that this line of credit existed.
But what it does show is that with the line of credit out there, he has this pool of money that he can tap into at any time for any amount. It happens that he chose, you know, the $1.5 million or so.
But the point is he didn't. I mean, I think that it was, you know, we're parsing hairs here, I think, and this is where the trial court came to. And I don't know the government's reasoning for not attempting to put in the entire amount. They referred to it as their conservative approach in only addressing the 1.56 that was actually transferred and then repaid. And I guess my point is, had the court found or considered and found the entire amount to be included as an amount of loss, the $6.5 million, the court still would have needed to consider that at least $1.56 million of that was repaid and that should be credited back against the total amount of loss. My point is that even though the government only elected to go after that specific amount, mm-hmm. Mr. Brunell still should receive credit for that amount that was repaid.
I guess what I'm concerned about is whether, in effect, you've gotten a windfall, because you could say by fraudulently opening up the full line of credit, they certainly, you know, he intended to be able to use that much money. The intended loss could have gone up to that. And, yes, the government confined itself to the 1.56, but drawing on it or repaying it doesn't really address the fact that the line of credit is out there and the nature of lines of credit. You draw on them, you repay, you draw, you repay, and it might not affect the intended loss.
Well, I think that...
Which fortunately enough, I don't know whether it would have gone up if they'd counted the full $6 million. They didn't, so we'll stick with the 1.56. But
certainly, and it would certainly be a different issue as far as an appeal goes had they included that, because we'd be talking about a number much closer to $20 million than we are to
right.
$600,000 away from dropping him down two levels.
Mm-hmm.
So, in addition to the Harrison Lakes property, there were some assignment fees. These were basically fees that were paid. The government's argument in this case is that there was a loss of profits, and this comes to approximately $1.8 million. The crux of this is that Mr. Brownell was employed by Belinsky. He made an agreement with another company, Mann Brothers, and then would get offers to purchase on these properties, would then go to Belinsky and say, we're buying these properties and you need to pay these assignment fees to get them. The argument here, obviously, is that the evidence that's before the court, that was before the district court, doesn't show that these fees were paid outside the normal course of business. Although Mr. Brownell's involvement may have been improper and fraudulent, I don't know and don't believe that these were actually an intended or an actual loss. I don't think that's been proven. Clearly, we have $1.8 million here in fees paid. That's an easy number to pick out and pull because we can point to these transactions and add that up. But, again, I don't think there's any information in the record or the pre-sentence report that indicates that these are anything beyond actual fees that they may have paid anyway. So I don't think that that should be counted against him.
Why would they have paid any fees since they apparently had this business opportunity themselves before Mr. Brownell inserted himself into the middle of it? Why would there have been a fee incurred?
It's my understanding that it's a common practice in these type of dealings with contractors and builders that oftentimes one will obtain the rights to a property and do certain things to that property and then assign those rights to someone else. I don't think it's beyond the normal course of business or beyond the realm to even consider that that's a possibility here. Again, if that answers your question.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. We also have some unfunded escrow agreements, and I see I'm running short on time, so I'll speed up here. There were four agreements. Three of them expired before anything was found out in this scheme. The fourth one, which totaled approximately $1.6 million, was assigned apparently to Mann Brothers, which was another entity in this, and allegedly for fees that Belinsky owed to them. My argument is obviously that this was treated differently than the three prior escrow agreements. I think The four agreements were not treated equally in the court's view. Three of them were never used for anything, but we have an amount here that was never an actual loss. It was never even an intended loss. It was there to benefit Belinsky. However, the government has pointed out that there might be or is some ongoing litigation regarding this final agreement. I still don't know that that puts it in this loss category to be counted. Our final argument regarding Mr. Brownell's, and I see him over my time, so I'll end. Okay. Just briefly, there are certain things I'd like to point out to the court regarding Mr. Brownell's actions that I don't think the district court considered. The fact that he was given a 10% interest in a Walgreens as allegedly payment for participating in some of these schemes, and despite the fact that he was involved in all of these, I mean, he was dealing with individuals that had a high level of sophistication, businessmen and attorneys, and I don't think the court put as much emphasis on that as they should have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Simon. Mr. Jacobs?
May it please the court, my name is Matt Jacobs. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in Milwaukee. I handled the prosecution below and the sentencing. Mr. Brownell was a river of fraud, and Judge Clavert made reasonable efforts to measure the extent of that fraud and Mr. Brownell's role in it. Review of the record demonstrates that almost every function that Mr. Brownell had, either as the director of acquisitions and development for this residential home construction business, or as his chief executive officer, CEO, he abused each and every one of those, whether it was hiring employees, paying expenses, paying invoices, paying their compensation, purchasing property for the company, obtaining loans by forging the signatures, corrupting the employees. In every way, he abused his position and defrauded his employer and others. And every person he came in contact with, virtually every category of persons he came in contact with as the CEO, he corrupted. You know, the employees he corrupted, he paid them under the table, had approved fraudulent invoices, paid them money to leave that company to go to another company. He corrupted the vendors, people who were dependent on Belinsky Brothers for work. He corrupted them and got them to submit fraudulent invoices.
Now, Mr. Jacobs, yes, ma'am. I'm fully prepared to believe that Mr. Brownell was pretty bad, but we do have to address these particular challenges to the amount that Mr. Simon has raised, because it's very clear that you can't do a guideline sentence without at least first properly calculating, or a Booker sentence without properly calculating the guidelines. And I'm worried about this Harrison Lake property that I was talking about with Mr. Simon. And it looks to me like it's not even clear. Some of it may have been repaid, some of it may not have been repaid, but what's the fundamental reason for throwing that amount into the hopper when it looks like it was, in fact, restored to the company before Mr. Brownell was caught?
Judge, we started with the line of credit, the $6.5 million line of credit.
But you didn't count that as intended loss. You could have asked the district court judge. Why did you not ask for that to be the intended loss?
Judge, I took a more conservative approach because the guideline range I anticipated we were looking at, the loss figure, was between $7 and $20 million. And whether the district court included $1.5 million or $6.5 million, we would have still been in that same range.
But the logic of it, either it's at risk, there's a legal question about whether at risk is the same thing as intended loss. You know, and the line of credit just sitting out there, maybe there were fees incurred to maintain it or something, but I'm not sure how Belinsky Brothers is hurt by a line of credit. Because this particular guideline is looking at financial loss, right?
It does, Judge, but this court has said that intended loss means placing at risk the victim's money. And I believe we could have successfully argued for the inclusion of the full $6.5 million, that line of credit was obtained by Brownell first by soliciting other employees at Belinsky Brothers to forge the signatures of the owners. The owners are completely unaware of it. Then fraudulently pledging the assets of that business to secure that line of credit at M&I Bank. And it was a line of credit that he could then draw on to use for whatever he wanted to use. And we focused on the $1.5 million since there was absolute proof that, in fact, he intended to use it for a fraudulent purpose because he then took it and bought property that he himself wanted, that, the owners were completely unaware of.
Is it your position, though? I mean, suppose he'd never bought it again and the owners had wound up with this Harrison Lake property. Would they have been hurt by that? You'd have to offset the value of the property, I would think.
I would say that the line of credit continued to be outstanding even as at the time it was uncovered. The line of credit was still outstanding. So their assets, their financial interests were still put at risk, and it's fairly counted as intended loss. Whether he
because
got around.
Because of the fact that it's secured by other assets of the company?
It's secured by property they own in Waukesha and an assignment of rents from that property. So I believe all of that can be counted as intended loss at that point. Again, because there was absolute proof that he intended to then draw on it and use it fraudulently. We said, well, the $1.5 million, at a minimum, that comes in, and that gets us into a wide range. We don't need to debate further speculation as to could he have had some legitimate purpose, some valid, non-corrupt, non-fraudulent purpose. But we know for certain he was going to use the $1.5 million to buy the property in January of 2004. He doesn't get around to repurchasing it until July of 2004, at least 6 months later. And since he's put them at risk to that extent, it's a fair measure of the gravity of his fraud.
Is there anything in this record to suggest that as of July, when he does the repurchase, he's thinking that he's about to get, caught?
I'm not sure there's anything in the record.
It wasn't too much longer after
almost
July.
Immediately. But I don't believe
you
in
don't
the
think
record
there's anything in the record
to indicate that as to why he's transferring it there. I don't want to get too much in the weeds. What happens is October 03, he signs an offer offer to purchase in the name of the Belinskys, in their company. Now, he doesn't have any ownership interest in that, can only sign as a representative. A couple days before the closing in January 04, he transfers that offer to purchase to an entity, FHB, which he does have an ownership interest in, and therefore can sign off on his own behalf as an owner. So he's then in a position, that's why just before closing he transfers it to FHB. He has that entity when 6 months later he can sign as the seller of the property while his co-conspirator and partner, Growl, can sign as a representative of the buying entity there to transfer the property, and it won't get back to his owners. So it's again, a very elaborate, a long-term scheme, but clearly at the point at which he takes $1.5 million out, he's put them at risk at that point, and the property he purchased doesn't secure that line of credit because he's transferred the money from one bank where the line of credit is to a second bank where he has signature authority and then is able to spend the money to buy the property there. Again, the government's perspective is the judge made reasonable efforts to accurately assess the loss and the defendant's role in this offense, and therefore this court should affirm the sentence imposed. Thank you.
Mr. Jacobs. Mr. Simon, your time has expired. You may have a minute if you wish to reply. All right. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.